My name is Walt Johnson. It's Cal Holloway, and we'll hear more from Cal in a little bit, but I'll talk first. The topic for our evening, I put up here, where the rainbow hits the road. Note, it is the road, it is not the fan. Some people have not heard, I guess, that particular commercial saying from, I think it must have been the early 60s, or heaven forbid, even in the 50s. But we have heard a number of great and wonderful things about the rainbow this week. And the question that keeps going through our minds, perhaps, or at least through mine, is, so what? Where I live and work in a little parish in Bloomington, Indiana, we have some very concrete and practical concerns. We have some people with some very real faces, some very real lives to deal with. And so I thought it might be fun if we could simply get together in a group like this and with Cal's assistance to talk about how does all this really fit into where we really live and do our daily work, our daily ministry, whether it's in the parish or in our wider community life in the workaday world. So by and large, this is going to be our program this evening, our forum. Neither Cal nor I have prepared any extensive kind of remarks. I did, however, want to build a bridge between some of the things that Dr. Pete Perro has said this afternoon to where we might end up where we might start this evening. About how many of you were in on Pete's session today?
This morning.
I think it was this morning. It all kind of runs together, doesn't it?
lose track of time.
Yeah, not too many. Okay, that's fine.
Let me move this.
This is his. Pete's not here. Good.
Let's talk about him.
Yeah, this is his artwork, and I don't know if he's had it copyrighted or not. But he talked about, right now we're not talking church so much as we're talking culture. And that these little letters indicate several of the cultures that are operative in our country right now, with the white and the black and the Hispanic and the Asian and Native American. And depending on what part of the country you live in or what part of some county you live in, these might not quite accurately describe the various colorations of the rainbow in your place. But Pete was saying that there is such a thing at work in the culture as inauthentic relationship. That it seems that what happens in many places is that the relationship goes like this, from Hispanic to the larger dominant community, the white community, or perhaps from the black community into here, and that kind of thing all the way around. He went on to say that this was not his diagram, but I think it's what he was saying, that this kind of inauthentic relationship would be much improved rather than asking all of these cultures to buy into the dominant culture if we could learn to operate somewhat more as family or community so that the arrows would go, you know, more like this, and there would be all sorts of flow and there would be cross flow and all that kind of thing. That's going to have to go that way. So in the culture, it looks something like this many times. We think that it would be neat if it would look like this if we had all those subcultures in our particular community. But where most of us live, it probably looks something like this. Now, Cal and I live in different kinds of situations, and so where I live in Bloomington, Indiana, I'm going to have to put a big W in here. That's called the white folks at St. Thomas Lutheran Church. And over here, we don't have Asians and Hispanics and such interesting people in Bloomington, Indiana. But we do have Black Americans. And there is this kind of a situation right now. St. Thomas Lutheran Church in Bloomington, Indiana is a great big W with a few isolated variations on that theme. These are really neat people. They're people basically of goodwill. They would love, by and large, you know, there are always individual circumstances, but by and large, these people want some of these people, the ones who aren't going to the Baptist church and the Methodist church, they want these people to come over here and to worship with us. And I'd like that. We don't know how to do that. That's where we are. That's where our rainbow hits the road. When I get back home in early August, I'd like to know if there is a way, short term or long term, that we can do that. Cal, you've got a different situation.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
It's by, not yet. It's by coincidence that we are here, since I once served as intern in St. Thomas Lutheran Church in Bloomington, Indiana. Wow. And I loved it. And what you're describing is very true. In Dayton, and in the People's Republic of Westwood, we have a community which is somewhat similar to this, except that in Dayton it's about 50-50 black and white, and the congregation has prided itself over the years of being an intentionally integrated congregation, and pretty proud of that heritage. In most cases I have found, however, most congregations which say they are integrated are really in transition from either black to, if this is from white to black or white to Hispanic, pretty much operating out of this mode. For those who buy into a particular culture and are expected to own up to all of its conditions. The people of, I'll use the same thing here, Westwood, the big W, are pretty much involved in the community and larger area. However, within the Christian congregations of the area, we find that we are, we have one member here, so I have to be careful about what I say. We find that we are seeing a lot of different people coming in, going out, black and white, but by and large, this wall is here, and it's a very wide, thick, heavy, and tall wall in terms of geography of the city. You know, once the blacks crossed 3rd Street, the whites moved out of there and went over to the other side of into the Dayton View area, then we went into Dayton View and they went across Salem, and now they're crossing Main Street, and folks don't have any place else to go now. So they're beginning to come back in, and it has all sorts of strange variations. But one thing about where the rainbow hits the road, I just want to give you some background about where I'm from anyway. As we arrived here, I think that and having conversation with a couple of the pastors that we met by sheer coincidence in this area. We were talking, and we had just finished touring the area, and we went over and we had lunch in the park and endured that. We had also gone around and we saw some of the conditions of the migrant farmers, and we were discussing this with the two pastors, who were very concerned, say, yes, that's a very serious thing. So, well, is anyone do anything about it? How about your congregation? You know, you seem to be very interested in this problem.
Oh, no. Those apple growers are members of our congregation. If we raise that, they run us out of here. And I said, holy smoke. You know, how do you address that? I don't want to make enemies of the people I meet right up front. That's a very real concern. There are many pastors I know of in Dayton and other places who are branded as radicals in some sort of way if they do get involved, and the congregations are not. And generally they are short-lived in those areas or have no credibility within the congregations. And then there are other situations where the pastors are not involved and the people of the congregation are saying, when are we going to do something? And that I sensed in St. Thomas as well. They have the people of the congregation saying, we really want involvement. We want to do some things. But yet there was no way that those things were getting done, and there was no investment of individuals in seeing to it that the broader ministry was taking place for mutual growth. So I raised those two as those three items as simply paradigms that might help inform our discussion this evening. But it is quite a difficult situation in parishes when it comes to either integrating by race or by class or education, and sometimes even by geography and religious background. I think you see some difficulties there. Many of the congregations that claim some degree of having a rainbow or being integrated, I think every congregation is integrated in one way or another. Even if they're all from, if they're all in Holly, Minnesota, and everybody's come from the same. You're from Holly, Minnesota.
I integrated my congregation in Northern Illinois by being the only German in a whole Scandinavian congregation.
So everyone, and so I used to be offended by Scandinavian jokes and things like that. But I said, well, that's not all bad, because it is, in a way, a celebration of who we are, or an acknowledgement and humor of who we are. And there is as much variation among Black Americans as there are white Americans. It's a question of how we break down the big walls that divide us within our communities of living faith. And I think that you'll probably have more ideas about that than I, but I think it can only happen as we discuss on a personal level and as we understand it in our own congregations. You know, what can we do? What should we do? What should we not to do? And what we would like to see. You know, is it reasonable to expect God's people to come together in such ways where the walls do not divide us, or where we can appreciate the gifts of our various cultures, whether it be generational cultures or whatever else. Am I leading into, at least am I hitting some of the things that
are you saying what
talked
how,
about?
What you to say? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a good mouthpiece every now and then, you know. Walt, in this case, has sort of made the ice balls, and I throw them. I think that it's all appropriate now that we just sort of share where we are. And not that everyone should go around the room one at a time, but we talk openly about some of the concerns that we have, or questions. Saying, well, how does this fit in? How can my little congregation do anything? There's no one around us who's different from us.
Or perhaps there is something actually working within someone's congregation
that be good
would be helpful for the rest of us to know.
I am a member of a congregation that's probably 96-97% white, but we have a few people who are Asian descent, what have you, and we have sort of gotten into the problem by supporting different organizations. And when we support different organizations, some of them are predominantly Black, some of them are predominantly white, but we address the issues of the community as a whole, instead of just taking part of it. And we try to involve all groups, whether we have a minority group over here, they share in what we do, and their other groups, they all share in it.
I think one way that most congregations would probably have to face, as an I'll use race as the boogeyman right now, or boogie woman, but we have to be, you know, everybody has to be in this. But how many of our congregations would be very open to very seriously considering a candidate that the bishop might offer if the candidate were a black person coming to a white congregation or white community? Or how realistic is that? You know, what would, you know, what kind of words would be shared around the coffee pot in the fellowship hall, you know, if that happened? I think that might help to identify a lot of the things in our church about where we are, how reasonable this expectation is that we hear the word from God's appointed messages or messengers, regardless of what those messengers happen to look like or sound like. In my congregation, yeah, Don.
I'd like to share some frustration. We belong to perhaps the most sociologically diverse congregation I've ever encountered in my life. It is just about, my perception anyway, about half black, half white, with a good mixture of Hispanics. There are people from the gay community there. There are people who have PhDs, those who have just gotten to grade school. There are some people who are not wealthy, but comfortable, and those who are very poor. In a predominantly black area, in fact, the most tough neighborhood in Columbus. But it's a frustration, and it's sad because the model is still the one that's over there on the left.
Mm-hmm.
All these people are there fitting in to a pattern that is set. Mm-hmm. And there's no sense that these people bring any gifts with them that the community as a whole can receive.
Sure.
And in this regard, I think of a kind of personal pilgrimage that I've gone through. When I was first in seminary and afterwards and ordained, I was involved in the civil rights movement, and I was involved in the civil rights movement primarily because I was going to demonstrate to myself and to the world that I was not a racist like my father and my grandfather, who happened to be a member of the Ku Klux Klan. He was a member of the Klan more because he was anti-Roman Catholic than anti-black, nevertheless. You know, that was part of my family heritage, and by damn, that was not going to be me, and I was going to prove it to everybody. So I was there for really very bad reasons. But then I got less bad reasons, but there were still bad reasons. I was going to be noble, and I was going to make this great contribution. I was going to help these poor black folk, you know, that sort of thing. That kind of motivation. Which was really, people in the movement were very kind and gentle. And,
they hit you with a rubber club.
But hinted that maybe I might be more service in the white community than the black community doing something about racism. And finally getting to the point where I saw that what was needed was something in me. I needed enrichment. I needed help. I needed something that I did not have in my own heritage. I did not have my own experience. I was there in an experience richer than my own, and I think the expression of that, I mean, something that symbolized that for me is the music that we've been singing here this week, and how wonderful that is. And I think of the music that's going to be coming here, contemporary black gospel music, as well as the spiritual, as signs and expressions of something that just is not part of my history, part of my culture, part of my experience, and a mindset, a set of sensibilities. I need enrichment, and I think that's what's so sad about that congregation. You know, it's there, it's integrated, quote unquote, but there isn't this sense we need enrichment. We need something that's more than us. It's not just that we are open or we have something to give. We have inadequacies and voids and limitations, and So I just share that for what it's worth.
I think when you one phrase that you mentioned really hits home to me, and that is that we need something more than what we need something bigger than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. You know, I know at Westwood, yeah, we were nailed into that LBW. You know, which is a fine worship resource, but totally irrelevant to our expression of faith. You know, we are good, strong Lutherans by doctrine, by faith, and to assume that if one is Lutheran, one must use that very, Nordic understanding of expression of faith in all circumstances. I think that's good. That flies in the face of what we teach of our doctrine, and it opened us up a great deal when we started using other resources in addition to that. You know, we use the format, but we use a variety of music. Gospel, spiritual, and we're hoping to get more into contemporary music in addition to the classical and more familiar and the Great Awakening music of the latter part of the 19th century. We're finding great benefits there, and it's opened up our congregation, and including with many of the blacks in the congregation who felt that they were not Lutheran if they sang the stuff that they used to sing in the Baptist or Methodist congregation, you know. And there we have that problem too, with personal identity. We're bought into that bigger system there and have been affirmed by it, and not learned that God exists within both of where they're from is also is what they're part of and where they're going. So,
there are some problems, I think, even beyond the white and black. I grew up in Ohio, where I was comfortable because I was a German among the Germans. But then I moved to the Northwest, where I suddenly find myself a member of an ethnic minority. And I'm I live in Scandinavia sometimes. I think I live in a colony of Norway. And the emphasis on Scandinavian tradition and the repeated mention of our Swedish, Norwegian, Icelandic, Finnish heritage is so constant, so great that I feel like an outsider very often.
Mm-hmm.
And I often wonder about a black or a Latin or a Hispanic person walking into those churches. And and people make a great deal of it. That was the first German pastor of a 100-year-old Augustana church, and in order to make me feel at home, with a special ceremony would be devised, and then we had smorgasbord, and we were officially, my wife and I officially became Scandinavians. We were given pickled herring and snus and hard bread and fist and so on. But when churches are at that level, then not even they make a special point of making a turning a German to a Scandinavian. Now what will they do about the blacks? And
there are plenty of black Norwegians.
Yeah, I
know. I'm very serious about that. Those who have adopted, been absorbed by the big government.
But I think that the churches need to make to, in many ways, they need to appreciate their heritage. But if the constant repetition of our Swedish, Norwegian traditions does not really help the cause of making the outsider feel at home.
Sure.
I belong to I'm on the staff of a city church down in Seattle, and we do have any number of blacks who belong and who come and who worship with us. And every time I hear another reference to the fact that we are so proud of our Swedish heritage, I feel uncomfortable. And I wonder how the blacks and the Latins and Hispanics feel. So I think there are it's not just the white and black. I think there are Germanic, because that was a problem we had back in Ohio. Although this was interesting, my home church, one of the oldest Lutheran churches in Ohio, 150 years old now, as a boy we had a black member,
1,000-member church, one black man, Mr. Williams, I remember him well. But he was a member of that church because he spoke German. And so he must be a nice guy because he was a black man and spoke German. And he was well adopted, recognized, received. But later on, when the blacks moved into the territory, people said, well, you know, they don't speak German, or they don't have a German background. So we have, there's some peculiar angles on this whole business that we need to deal with.
So the man who spoke at the beginning, what is your name?
John.
John. You were starting to give some examples of things in your church that you feel have worked. Could you amplify that a little bit?
We have a child care center which caters to children of prisoners, and naturally, most of them are black. We have programs which help AIDS patients. We have programs which cater to people who are on drugs. Some of them are predominantly black, some of them are predominantly white. We work with a food bank, and things like that.
And you feel like these programs cross those lines?
They cross, however, the congregation has not changed. Mm-hmm. Recently, a member came to me and he said, what's happening? What's happened to the blacks in the congregation? Because he didn't see any of them. And you know, present. He says, are they leaving? But that hasn't changed. But the programs we are invested in, or programs we give help to, involve people of different races and different cultures.
So when you say the people haven't changed, what do you mean?
When I say the people haven't changed, the congregation itself has not changed.
You mean the
congregation is still predominantly white. However, their goals and their objectives are community oriented. So I look at that as being a good example. But as the faces of the congregation, that's fine.
What part of the country are you from?
I live in San Francisco.
So we've had some allusions to something needs to happen with liturgy and music.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an example of dealing with program, and you didn't mention the liturgy and music of worship, but perhaps...
the liturgy and music is...
Same
yes.
LBW or
yes.
Blue Book. Yeah.
See, I disagree because I'm from Chicago, and first of all, Chicago's unique in that we have the greatest number of black pastors in a geographic area in the country, Lutheran pastors, that is. We have 16 ordained Lutheran pastors, men and women, in Chicago area. And so we have, I think, we have the greatest number of black Lutherans also, and the greatest concentration. We don't. Mm-hmm. Who's number one? Because we got to be number two.
New York.
Okay. It's very close. But in any case, there's a great diversity of styles within these churches.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some churches that St. James is an example, which has a high liturgical style, which they do things that Vatican II did away with. I kid you not. I mean, they do things there that are unbelievable. And those people that are there love that because they are, it's their being there is somewhat a reaction against kind of what I would call the emotionalism of a Baptist church. And they want that high liturgical style. Then there's a church like Bethel South, where I'm on internship, where you spell out the word L-I-T-U-R-G-Y, they don't know what you're talking about. I mean, their services are so free and free-flowing. Another one would be like Bethel West with Dave Nelson. You know, gospel music, the whole thing, it's like a Baptist service, except that it's in this Lutheran building. And so there's a great diversity within the black community of worship styles, but then also desire for worship styles. And those people at Bethel West who have this Baptist-like service prefer that. And those people at St. James who have that thing that exceeds the Vatican's expectations want that. And so I don't think that you can assume that you're going to have to change your worship style to attract black people or Hispanic people or, you know, anything like that. It may be that that's necessary in some cases, but I don't think across the board it's going to necessary.
I think that what you're saying really reflects a problem, not just within Lutheranism, but mainline Protestantism generally, and that is that we are lousy in carrying out our number one responsibility, and that is in proclamation, and they said in inviting, in sharing, in giving a witness. I think we're terrible at that. Yeah. We assume that the best way to do that is to make a couple of changes, give our ushers pins, and do a couple of things in the worship services, and people will break the doors down to come in to us. You know, we do not go out. And I think that evangelism really does perk up a congregation. It says, hey, you know, we have first a vision, and then some means of carrying out and making that vision come to life. If you're not out knocking on doors or making some sort of invitation, then I think it's a very great danger
of
becoming homogeneous in laziness.
I'm constantly surprised at the response to me, and especially the West Englewood community, because I walk around there and knock on doors and invite people in, and they respond. And realistically or idealistically, I think it should be a black person out there, you know, but I'm there, so that, you know, and they do respond. So, it's, I mean, if you give the invitation, you know, not say that you're always going to get 100% response, but it's there. People are looking for something. That community is highly unchurched.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just anybody, I think, sort of paying attention to them and inviting them in is welcome.
Sure. And how many black white congregations and black communities are there around the country, or Hispanic communities, and, you know, these little oases in the middle of of a larger geographic area? How many of those are there where we sit back and wait for people to come in and be like us?
Are you suggesting that perhaps the people of this St. Thomas Church in Bloomington should go into the across the northwest side of town and ring doorbells at the black end of town?
Well, that's part of what I do, and it's effective for, you know, the way I do it. I mean, I don't know. See, I don't know your circumstances. And you kind of need the right people too. In other words, I'm in that community though so much that they see me and they perceive me as being a part of the community. See, that's the difference. I'm not coming in from the outside. And so I do think that that's a big factor. I mean, they, you know, and they do. It's well, that white woman that walks around the streets, yeah, she belongs to the church. I mean, they know me. And see, so that's different. So I don't know what the effect would be of someone coming outside of the area just for that purpose.
Okay. How about fellowship between the Big W and one of the congregations? Maybe a big.
See, I think that's where you start. Is to have services, joint services, occasionally or for a special occasion or something like that with a black congregation of another denomination, just to get the sort of bridge building going. But I don't know if that would be effective either.
Has anyone tried something like that in your congregation?
I can report on somebody who did try it. She's not here to speak for herself. Maxine Washington, when she was on internship, she was primarily selected for that internship site in Davenport, Iowa, because the congregation is in a black area, and they wanted to bring some of the people from the area into the congregation. And primarily what she was doing was arranging ecumenical services with the Baptist Church, the Methodist Church, you know, that kind of thing. And for the period of time that she was there, it was very effective in having sort of inter-fellowship kind of thing. Unfortunately, when she left, it all collapsed, but, you know. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a seed was planted.
Pardon?
Maybe a seed was
yeah,
planted.
Yeah, all right.
But isn't that a kind of a mixed agenda? That it seems to me that kind of is valuable as it is to have that kind of you know, cross-cultural, cross-racial kind of encounters, that's if the goal is to then recruit people out of other churches into your congregation, it seems to me that's, you know, that...
I don't think it was.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. There are two issues involved, because I don't, what you just described, wasn't that, but I'm not at all sure that we don't have to always go back to the issue of the door knocking. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want your congregation to grow, you have to invite people. And if you want your congregation to grow in a racially diverse way, you have to invite racially diverse mm-hmm. populations. And I mean, I just think that's something all of us are reluctant to do.
Let me take that one step farther, and perhaps this has been experienced too in some of your parishes. quite often we will have one or two or three people of color come into our congregation on a Sunday morning. And they look around and bless their hearts. They're intelligent. They can see. You know, there's no one else there like them in terms of color. And so it's the last we see of them, even if they get treated, you know,
right.
with great hospitality and things. How do you overcome that?
There are a lot of people who do.
You apparently did happen all
the time in my congregation. I see people, we say, hi, how are you? I ask them their name. I said, you know, come back. And I do that. They never show up again. Mm-hmm.
But you stayed. Why did you do that?
Because I've been connected with the Lutheran Church, and because there's some bond with some of the people there that I don't exactly know how to explain. They are community-minded for one. That's one of the reasons. And I'm concerned about community. And that's one of the main goals of my congregation is to work and to help the community. And I think that's the thing that keeps me there. And I'm comfortable.
I find that to be really significant, what you just said, John. Because mostly we've heard tonight from pastors who are all facing this as a problem in their job of how to make their parishes more intercultural or broader based. But you are responding in your parish to the people. And I'm wondering if it's important to other people here to expand the basis of your parishes. Would you like to have black folks in significant numbers in your parish? Would you like it? Would you be open to the change that could bring? Is that desirable? Do you wish that your pastor would see you in your job as that? Or do you think that it is your pastor's job to accomplish that? I'm sort of having a hard time getting a handle on that because we mostly heard from pastors and they're mostly thinking of it as part of their job description. But you said clearly now that you're not in your parish because of anybody's job description. You're there because you have a bond with the people.
Yes, when I go to people, we have a common bond that they're community-minded.
Yeah.
However, the question is always raised as to why there aren't more people of color in the congregation. But it dies right there.
But the question is raised.
It's raised, yeah.
Does your congregation want more people of non-color?
Clear bones. Yes. Yes. Like, we do. And some have joined. You know, some white people have joined our congregation recently. And we're all at home with each other. And it's always been by invitation. Once in a blue moon, someone will come in and we cannot figure out why they're there. But we enjoy them and welcome them and make sure. The biggest thing we do is put everyone to work. You know, we put visitors to work just as we put members to work. And then when they come in, everyone gets a task. And they do it, and they immediately find that bonding. And that's the way we have built fellowship. And I think that's been the number one reason for our growth. We're the only growing congregation in the West End of Dayton.
I wanted to come back to Ingrid's question, I guess,
which
belongs to us as a group. It's kind of a difficult question, I think, for someone to answer. Maybe somebody wants to say, no, we don't want different kinds of people in our congregation. We want it to stay all Swede or all Dane or something.
And we ought to feel comfortable, at least being comfortable in saying what we think to it.
That'd be nice.
I hope that, anyway.
This is running counter to what all the advice of the church growth folks who say what you've got to do is recognize ethnocentricity,
right.
And then what you do is you have little satellite congregations. You have St. Mark's, White Lutheran Church, St. Mark's, Black Lutheran Church, St.
Right.
Mark's, Hispanic Lutheran Church, They all use the same property. They have services designed for them. And then they meet together for Holy Communion once a month, or they meet together for the church picnic, or maybe the Sunday schools do something together. But basically, you have overlapping congregations, and don't worry about getting them all in one congregation. You know, Roman Catholics used to be able to do that when the Mass was in Latin, and people didn't have to bother with one another. They just all attended. You could have sociological diversity, and everybody went home. But now, you know, what you're trying to do is just really impossible, so forget it, you know. You have the rainbow, but separate out the colors, you know, and,
right.
And just make sure your church has as many colors as possible, but obviously they're going to be distinct.
And that's,
so that's what the church growth people are saying.
Church growth folks are really preaching heresy.
But it's scientific, based on scientific principles.
And it produces desired results, more numbers. So you can have a bigger tent, so you can have more numbers. Yeah.
Now, I appreciate that, Don, because it simply underscores, I guess, the fact that most of us probably understand we're not in the business of success. Without sounding overly pious, I guess, I want all of those people in the congregation where I worship because they are a part of my family. And to have them worshiping at 12 and I've got to worship at 11, that won't quite make it. The other thing that I realize in my gut, and it would cause me more work given the kind of work that I do, that there would be some cost. I would have to make some changes. I'd possibly have to work harder. Whatever changes are made in our congregation will be perceived by many as a cost or as a negative. And it's got to be decided, I think, somewhere in advance as to whether we're willing to do that. And we, at this point, I think we're not sure what those costs are. Except, as has been said in a variety of ways, we need to be more sensitive to the people and the background of whoever they are. You may be willing to hear those Sven and Ole jokes, but you're probably an exception.
I don't like them, but you know, I recognize that that's a part of folks. So.
I would bet any money that one of the costs would be that some of the members would leave.
Okay,
well, sure.
I guarantee
absolutely.
That.
Okay. Our congregation was practically destroyed as soon as, you know, we had waves of children. We didn't have, you know, a lot of 14, 13, 15-year-olds. They came in 10-year-old bunches and 15-year-old bunches, you know, especially after the pill came along. You know, we had chunks of age groups. And as soon as many of the white girls, you know, the children played together, but as soon as they started becoming teenagers and dating, a lot of the whites disappeared. Yeah, the big demon jumped out of the closet and scared the hell out of a lot of people. And so that's, I think, one thing that we have to face in many of our communities.
I think that our congregation would welcome opportunities to learn new ways about worshiping. But in our congregation, I see it as a problem of having a very authoritarian, controlling white pastor who insists upon having a very high Roman worship sense.
Yeah.
And everyone else has to buy into that. And it's very frustrating.
And especially in Ohio.
Yeah.
Hamill graduate, apparently.
I should have brought my resume.
Could I throw in a little bit here about...
Please do.
As I see it, a lot of things have been going around my head, but I'll try and say a couple of them. In the first place, that model where everybody ties into the white, down a white congregation, for Hispanics, it would only apply to middle-class Hispanics. Mm-hmm. The lower-class Hispanics, they don't even know what church organization is all about. And much less would they want to buy into it. They really wouldn't. So the integration part probably would never happen for a good number of them. Secondly, I think the problem is that Big W,
the real problem is, how are white people going to accept people of color, genuinely accept them? We found with a lot of congregations, they say, we want to have these people in. Sometimes it's so that it'll help support the budget. We want these people in for one reason or the other. But probably 95% of the time or more, it's a kind of patronizing, paternalistic kind of thing. And the Hispanics are very quick. They're like kids. They know when you're genuine and when you're not. And they'll walk in the church and you may shake their hands and be very friendly, but they'll instantly notice whether or not you really want them there or whether you're just trying to be polite. And they'll be turned off. The one other thing that I've seen, if you try another model where you have the homogenous units, the Hispanics using the same facilities as the whites, but as a separate congregation, it's the building. The building is a real stumbling block, because the white congregation is very, very proprietary about their building. The women don't want the Hispanic ladies in the kitchen because they leave it messy. And the men don't want us worshiping in the sanctuary because the kids run around and they might break things up and papers are left on the floor and all kinds of things like that. And there's just no way that somehow, as far as I can see now, there's no way that the Anglo congregations, the Anglo people, are going to accept them as brothers and sisters in Christ. Unless they're sitting over there in another congregation, another building, they may have some contact. It's kind of pessimistic, I guess, for me. I'm kind of pessimistic about it. And I think the gospel can overcome that somewhere along the lines. But right now it's really, really pretty difficult.
Yeah, I got a couple of unused bubbles here. And not necessarily in terms of size of groups of people, but I think one of the things I heard you say, there has to be this kind of equality of care. I will say use of the facility sounds simply too pragmatic, but at least in terms of all things, the here is not a big W and here is not a big H for Hispanic, but the mutuality of it. I don't know, is that too ideal?
I don't think so. I'm just speaking from my own experience. When I feel distance from people and boundaries from people and blocks between people, the way those are usually overcome with me personally is when there's some kind of goal that we have together that's bigger than me or bigger than that other person. And I think our institutions are like that too, that they're self-serving. And as long as we do things that serve ourselves, then we don't have any way to transcend the things that lock us. And as soon as we get something that's bigger than us, and I guess that must be the gospel, then that might be something.
Absolutely. I agree.
One of the things that Holden offers is the opportunity to talk together and to learn. And education and communication are essential in the congregation. And until we make a concerted effort to do those two things, we can't just implement it and say, now, where are those members? We want them, but where are they? Well, until this dialogue takes place and somebody says, you know, when I was told tonight, I actually had a heart-to-heart talk with somebody who was very different from myself, and your statement today about being clearly honest with each other, is the first step down the road to breaking those blocks up, and that more opportunities like this, I mean, I don't know how you make them happen artificially, but it goes back to education and communication and a real effort by the church's part to educate the community.
Yeah, I noticed what I've been here, I guess, 2 or 3 days now, and I noticed for the first time this evening, with people in clusters actually talking about racism, sexism, all based on their own experiences. Mm-hmm. So in a way that was very gratifying. It's unfortunate that Holden has to be weird. In that respect, I use that word because in reference to what is normal, and this is a weird thing that's taking place.
And your comment also that it's the place where children are brought together, and that's where a lot of our hope is.
I'm from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and of course Native Americans are the largest minority there. I've served on many committees for the district through the 10 years I've been in South Dakota. You know, we're probably just as frustrated today as when we first started. I'm trying to break some of those barriers. I know I wander on those committees, but at the moment, too, we have a committee from the district, and I don't know what will happen to it now that we become a synod, but where we've tried to create some communication with people on the reservations and actually go to them and be with them on their turf and on their grounds and try to learn some things about them. We have also, as Lutherans, come to, at least many of us have come to say, why are we trying to create some Lutheran ministries when there are Episcopalians, particularly in South Dakota, and some Catholic, and can't we more cooperate with these ministries that are already there? Is it important to be a Lutheran ministry, or is it important that we learn how to communicate and to receive something from these brothers and sisters of ours in South Dakota that are not even Lutheran? And so, you know, we're kind of at that stage, and since I'm not on the committee, I can't give you an up-to-date report on that right now. In our own church, we see a lot of Native American people through the week because we have a sack lunch program, and anyone who wants a sack lunch on the days that the banquet in our town, which serves a hot meal, is not operating, then they get these sack lunches. So we have all these people coming in, and most of these three people, the largest majority are Native American people. And we see them at the banquet when that's being served, and we see them at the shelter that we have now in town, but we don't see them at worship. And I'm not sure that any of them would want to be at our worship again. I think our building, they'll come into our building if there's food offered, but I don't think we have the kind of worship experience that they want. And again, I ask the question, do they need to be Lutheran? But is anything being offered for them in worship? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that their institutions, which I have, which I own as my own, whether it be my worshiping institution, my economic institution, or whatever else. And when I love and appreciate those things for myself, I find it very hard to figure out what I should change about it in order to have others be a part of it with me. I find it very difficult, and I think that in our larger Lutheran family, that as we look at it as a group, that's equally as hard. There are many of us who appreciate what we have or who we are. Right now, and say, well, how on earth can I change this? I like it. Why should I want to? Why shouldn't everyone like it? and it becomes very difficult to put a handle on that. But even the nature, by nature of having a building, it shows that you know, there are cultures beyond that of European descent or European background that the whole idea of having a building is strange. You know, why have a building for a church? You know, that's something which is also reflective of our heritage.
I have just one thing that I'd like to say yet. I don't want to leave you all with the idea that there's nothing that can be done. With Hispanic ministry, it has to be relational and not programmatic. And I think what can be done is if we get the attitude that Christ had when he said to his disciples, I no longer call you my servants, but my friends. And when the Anglos can become friends of the Hispanics, that's when this will happen, the integration will happen. But it has to be They have to be willing to become their friends. Yeah. Down the line, as close friends as they would with the people in their clique.
Sure. One and two.
Just several comments I think are related. First of all, I think there's really an issue of control. I mean, I get a little uncomfortable when we talk about sort of trying to go out and get a few people of color in our churches. I think we all really appreciate the gifts that different cultures bring and the different kinds of worship style, but when we feel the same, if all of a sudden we realize it wasn't just a matter of incorporating a little bit of that into our worship, if all of a sudden we no longer had complete control of worship, is one thing. And it sort of relates to what you were just saying about the buildings. I wonder if the way any of this is really going to happen is if we just sort of disband churches and start over. And that's sort of half facetious, but somewhat serious. I think it's very difficult to take an all-white church that's been around for 200 years, or even 50 years, and expect that somehow or another you're going to create an integrated church. One of the churches that I'm quite familiar with in Boston is a church where finally the pastor, a black man with a white woman pastor, the two of them who had been working in churches for a number of years, really working on some of these issues, just finally started their own church, Church of United Community in Boston, and it's related to both UCC and Disciples of Christ. And it's flourishing. And there is every color in the rainbow in this. And there's a sense in which they all began together on equal footing, and the church is molded together with that sense. The final thing I'll say is I also think that there's a place where an all-white church or an all-black church perhaps needs to consider starting with relationships with people in the community and other churches in the community rather than just being concerned about their own membership. And being able to do that again on equal footing. I was on the staff of the church in Boston that was bilingual, almost equally Hispanic, black, and white. Very unusual, obviously. But we used to get calls all the time from suburban white churches that wanted to, we were the darling of the area because of this, and everybody wanted to help us. Very poor, but they didn't want to help us on our terms. They wanted to tell us what we needed. So we'd get calls all the time saying, we would like to come in and do this for your church, not, we would like to help. How can we?
And we want reports regularly.
Yeah. So I'm just throwing a conglomeration of comments together here, but
appreciate that, Barry. And I think that's especially your second comment, if I could just bracket that one out, is one of the reasons that personally I wanted to talk about this kind of thing. Is there any possibility that a 25 or 50-year-old white congregation can do something in this area, at least without radical cost, which, whether it's selling a building, oh, I'd love that. Or, you know, I would hope not disbanding, but something at least quite radical.
Or a black congregation which becomes very nervous or suspicious about motives.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they want to come over here and talk with us?
Yeah.
One more person.
Well, I think I'm something of a pessimist, but I hope that my pessimism is shattered by the gospel. No, it has been. But I think that one of the issues that I see, I'm also from Boston or living in Boston now, is probably the economic issue as being really central, more central maybe than what I picked up. And I think one of the hopes that I have is in churches that focus on that and then also focus on communitarian goals in the community and the extended community in a way that begins to unite different classes. And I think that it's in the churches that I've been affiliated with, I think it's just very unusual to see people of different classes get together. Almost never. And I'd like to hear whether there are churches that really have different classes that worship together, that come together.
Mine does not. We are homogeneous class-wise.
That's one of the things that's interesting about Chicago. Some of the city black congregations, which are at a higher educational and socioeconomic level, get along better with the white suburbanite congregations than they do with their own brothers and sisters in the city because of the class mm-hmm. difference. And not only get along better with, but when we go to youth conventions and we have, you know, 600 kids from all sort of areas in terms of socially, there'll be fights between, because of the class difference between the congregations of the city.
We've had that happen at our Lutheran church youth gatherings.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about synod gatherings.
I'm talking about the national one where it got to a point where there was protest that the black kids, they were using the swimming pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the Denver gathering that took place. Things like that.
I think probably what we should do is call this officially to a close.
Yeah.
And allow the possibility that some of you would like to continue this dialogue with Cal, and he will stay here.